town of Discovery Bay regular CSD board meeting is now called to order, and it looks like you're all starting to rise. Follow Vice President Pease in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Roll call has been taken, and let the record reflect, all members are present.
Okay, this is the time for public comment on any item that is not on the agenda. I have one card, Connie.
Connie Miller, 5735 Greenfield Way. I want to tell you a part of the mission statement. Provide effective and fiscally responsible municipal services. I'm nervous, by the way. It is a fact that Discovery Bay has a community center that needs major repair. The building itself, the parking lot, lighting around the building and parking lot, drainage, landscaping, sports courts, pool, etc. It is a fact that Discovery Bay Zone 8 monies pays for all these ongoing expenses and more, and we cannot fulfill the monthly obligation to pay for running the community center and at the same time keep up with the critically needed repairs to the building, the parking lot, etc. The April 2019 Harris District Study Report, which cost $24,750, states, quote, the current revenue, whether through CSD assessments or property tax, or under the agreement between the CSD and the county, are insufficient to cover the annual costs of maintaining and servicing the improvements, and has caused the postponement of necessary rehabilitation and replacement of certain public improvements. And I challenge everyone in this audience and the board and the staff to visit all these sites over and over again to see what they are talking about. It is a fact we are going to receive the Hoffman money of $1.3 million and in installments. It is a fact that repair of the existing pool was started and equipment to go along with it has been purchased. It's a fact the board decided to stop construction of the existing pool repair after already spending money on the equipment and labor to explore the idea of building a pool large enough to qualify for holding swim meets for the swim team using the Hoffman money. It is a fact the board voted to spend over $40,000 to Terracon for a geological survey to find out if it's feasible to build the pool. The report also shows the many problems the community center building and surrounding areas, parking lots, so forth and so on. It is a fact on 5-9, the board voted to pay Terracon $43,000 to draft a design for a six-lane pool with a 20-foot square bump out. Now, an important question is, did the board do a complete survey of everything in the community? The center itself, the parks and recreation, all those things that need repair and ADA updating. In other words, the building, the parking lot, the lighting, the drainage, so forth and so on. Before you decided to try and use the Hoffman money for this large pool, and I did say try, with everything...
Excuse me, Connie. Can you bring it to a close?
With everything in Zone 8 that is being ignored because of the lack of funds to cover all the needed projects, why would anyone add an additional burden of building a new pool when we already have a new one? We already have a very good one that has served the community for years. As someone has said, Discovery Bay is producing good, enthusiastic swimmers with the pool we've already had. And I urge the board to stop wasting money on the pool project and become fiscally responsible, which is what we voted you to do and what the mission statement says. Thank you.
Thank you, Connie. Yes, Terry.
Good evening, Terry Maine, Secretary of Labor. Just a couple of things. One, thank Officer Thomas for coming out here the other day and working really, really hard. I still don't see a lot of improvement with the speed enforcement. There's a lot of warnings being handed out, not too many citations. And I just would like to see a little bit more of it. The second thing is the intersection up here. I don't know whose idea, I guess it was Caltrans' idea, to take the white lines that are supposed to keep folks from turning in, going straight, and paint them yellow. They're supposed to put dots on there too, I guess, but there aren't any dots. Now, I can't quite comprehend how somebody thinks that just painted from white to yellow with some dots is going to keep anybody from driving through there. They're going to drive through anyhow. You need to put some poles up to stop them like that, whether you just, crash in front of their car or whatever. But the yellow painted lines and dots are just wasting money. And somebody's going to get hurt really bad. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Terry. And if I can just say, Officer Thomas, you received a compliment when you were at the back. So he was thanking you for coming out and doing your job out here. Any others? See no others. I'll close public comment. Move on to the consent calendar. Are there any items that the board wishes to report? Is there any public comment? I'll close public comment. Do I hear a motion?
Move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Area agencies, Leah. Member Diane Burgess.
Hello, good evening. Just a couple traffic updates out here. I'm sure a lot of you are aware, especially those who travel Vasco Road, but the Contra Costa County Public Works Department is repairing the guardrails on Vasco Road from Camino Diablo to the Alameda County line. So work started on June 3rd and should commence on June 6th. And they're working between the hours of 9 and 4, so definitely plan accordingly for using Vasco Road in that time frame. And then Byron Highway Traffic Safety Improvement Project has just kicked off on June 5th. And that project consists of an asphalt overlay on Byron Highway between Byron Hot Springs Road and the Alameda County line. Restriping the center line to feature double yellow no passing lines and a center line rumble strip, and replacing striping and pavement markings. And additionally, all signs along Byron Highway will be replaced to meet new reflective standards. And that construction will be taking place between 7 p.m. and 6 a.m. to try to minimize impacts to commute traffic. And then also I noticed this morning I was on Camino Diablo and it looks like they're repaving Camino Diablo, which I thought was supposed to be happening this fall, but it looks like they jumped on it earlier. So that's happening right now as well. And then just so you're aware, I'm working with Caltrans to have them, I've just had them do a bunch of weed abatement out on the median of Highway 4 out in front of the shopping center, but I need them to put the fence back up, and I noticed trucks are crossing or vehicles are crossing over traffic through that median area since the fence is down, and then they need to replace the no parking. I guess semis are parking there and crossing the highway, so maybe I can get CHP to help me out with that also, the no parking on the side of Highway 4. So, any questions?
I think I went by yesterday and they were putting the fence up.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Perfect, so they're already on it.
They were enrolling that fence.
We even think about it.
Putting it up. When is the construction on Vasco in?
That ends tomorrow?
Oh, good.
June 6th, so tomorrow, which will be the last day.
Thank you.
And the weed abatement out front on, along Highway 4, is that Caltrans? I believe it is, and that's the one you, it's been dead for quite a while, okay? You're gonna work on that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, is there more, because I understand that that already got taken care of?
Part.
Just part of it? Okay, I will give them a call.
In the excerpt, quick comment, regarding code enforcement, I believe that falls under Supervisor Rich's office. So, I don't know what they, if there's a current schedule for code enforcement patrolling through Scarab Bay or not, but boats and trailers are starting to become an issue again. I'm seeing boats, you know, as a realtor, I drive the streets continually out here, so seeing the same boats, seeing the same parking lots. I can name 30 different addresses off the top of my head, and they have, you know, weeks of cobwebs going off them, so they're not being boats utilized on a daily basis, they're just sitting there.
Right.
So that's something that we can get to.
I spoke to our code enforcement officer about that, and he has hit some areas, but not all. And I asked him, I said, okay, well, you went out and tagged it, have you gone back out and followed up? Because I know when you go back out after, I think it's 10 days, but he was giving it 30 days, that there's a, I believe it's a $200 violation to have it still out there, the boat trailer or RV trailer. So so he said he's working with that. I guess they have a new admin in the office who runs all that paperwork to do it. So he's trying to get her caught up on it also. But he's gonna tag team with a few other code enforcement officers and he's gonna pull from another department and go out and line the streets and start tagging. So it should be happening soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leah.
Thank you.
Sheriff's Office, Lieutenant Paul.
Good evening, Lieutenant Paul at the Sheriff's Office with the stats for the month of May 2019. We had 573 calls for service in the Discovery Bay area. Of that, the majority of the biggest number was 55 or alarm-related house alarms going off, which all proved to be false alarms. We took 45 reports during the time frame. We had 48 traffic stops. Of the selective crimes, we had three vandalisms that were reported, one residential burglary, which is looking good. We had arrests for false prescription, possession of dangerous drugs, a warrant arrest, possession of a firearm, which the individual did own a firearm, but they were carrying a car. So that's thinking that child abuse, and then we had a vehicle pursuit. It wasn't really in Discovery Bay, it was actually across the way over by Moorwood. That was Friday afternoon. We had two guys in custody of that. It was actually a carjacked vehicle from Stockton. So we were able to help out Stockton to get that in. A lot of support from the surrounding agencies, Brentwood and Oakland, supported in that endeavor, so we're happy with that. We're starting to see more identity thefts. So Tony Bonham's put some information back here for identity thefts. There's a similar correlation with possibly some of the mailbox thefts we had prior months, 3 or 4 months ago. But other than that, there's no trend identified in the area in regards to crime. And with that, if there's absolutely any questions, I want to introduce Bob Nelson from the Sheriff's Office. He's a special assistant to the sheriff. Did you have anything for that?
Yeah, one quick question, just out of curiosity.
Yes.
Failure to obey a traffic officer, what would that be?
That's basically a pursuit. That's not yielding for license signs.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a 2800. Yeah.
Okay, just curious.
That's the term for vehicle pursuit.
Gotcha.
And can I ask what a 1732S is?
1732 is a suspicious circumstance with the suggestion of a sex crime sheet that we look at. It actually didn't prove out to be a sex crime, but it falls in. That enables us to channel it towards our sexual assault detectors rather than regular detectors. So it's kind of a term of coding.
One question I have about the license plate reader cameras.
Yeah.
Where are we on that?
License plate reader cameras right now, we're believe on the last update, we had spoken with Public Works and Caltrans. We're trying to get on the same page with them. We are on the same page, but now Caltrans is, needs to have their schematics, the wiring diagrams updated. So we put it, over to Public Works doesn't have the software to update that. So now we have to take their CAD, CAD drawings or whatever. We have to farm them out to electrical engineer, electrical engineering firm to supplement the Caltrans CAD drawings with the new wiring that the county is going to be putting in those, connected to the Caltrans. So.
Sounds like red tape to me.
It's more of money. Not a big chunk, but just.
Funding?
Yeah, I think that I've talked with Kevin Warble, the funding's there, but we just need to identify someone to do the service for us and get it done. So it's not a future, we just need to get a contract.
Should be a request for a proposal.
I don't think we have to go that low because of the dollar amount, but we do need to find somebody.
Do you think it's possible that we can start the project within 30 days?
I can't venture a guess on that. Not knowing the electrical engineering realm and how long it takes to do this. From what I understand, the drones are involved, someone involved, so it does take an expertise and some special software to make that happen.
Thank you.
Well, and with that, Robert Nelson, he's going to introduce himself, like a special assistant to the sheriff.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I thought it was appropriate for me to take my jacket off when I saw the shorts today. So. Beautiful. Anyway, my name is Robert Nelson. I work as a special assistant to Sheriff David Livingston. I'm a retired police officer from Fremont. I was there close to 30 years. I know Bill very well. It's all business we did in Fremont. I do a number of things for the sheriff. My assignments vary, but one of the things that he wanted me to do this year was to conduct more community outreach. So I've been following around the lieutenants all over the county with the MAT meetings and all the different community meetings that are going on, just to get another set of eyes and ears and to provide some direct communication back to the sheriff regarding the issues that are individual to the community. So he just wanted to have more information gathered. He wanted me to be able to report out to him. And nothing against what they're doing through the Field Operations Bureau, with the lieutenants who do a great job as far as communicating all the information. But he wanted kind of the direct pipeline. And so I'm here and I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm taking copious notes and I'll report back to the sheriff. Thank you.
Can I ask you to report back to the sheriff if he could look into the wiring issue? Because that, it's extremely important for us because we're way out here in East County. License plate reader program was approved, everything's there. I understand bureaucracy.
Right.
But if he could maybe push that a little bit, we certainly would appreciate it.
If we have history, maybe that club a little bit.
Thank you.
All right, well, thanks.
Thank you. Okay, Officer Thomas, CHP.
Hello, Board. Officer Thomas with California High Patrol, the Contra Costa area. The stats we had up here last month, arrest-wise, we had 3 for DUI for under the influence of a drug, 4 for DUI for under influence of alcohol, 2 warrant arrests, 2 arrests for driving on suspended license for DUI, and 1 arrest for driving a vehicle without the ignition interlock device for a DUI, and 1 for an arrest for possession of stolen property. The citations out here, specifically Discovery Bay, we had 11 for speed, 2 for registration, 2 right of way, 2 unsafe passing, 1 equipment violation, 2 stop sign violations, a seatbelt violation, and a cell phone violation. The Bixler Road area, there was 3 citations for speed, 1 for reg, 1 seatbelt, and 1 for a cell phone. The surrounding area, right up here, Highway 4, there was 10 for speed, 3 for registration, 2 for right-of-way, which would have been turning on, or going straight through the turning lane, 3 for unsafe passing on the shoulder, 1 equipment violation, and 1 cell phone violation. That's what we have out here for that. Yesterday, I was able to get a detail that I talked about, the other jurisdictions coming out and stuff like that. So we had that go on yesterday, and I had the guys come out here, and we issued additional, in the afternoon, came out here, additional 37 citations. It was It was myself, we had some guys from Brentwood PD, Oakley PD, Pittsburgh PD, Antioch PD, and then assistants from the sheriff came out and helped us do it. So we were able to do that yesterday. So hopefully we can kind of get that off the line. So, but that's what we had out here last month. And in total, that detail, we did 155 citations with the areas and stuff. So, if you guys have any other questions or anything like that?
I just have a comment. I just want to let you know, Officer Thomas, that I really appreciate those blitz, and I know that sporadically, irregularly, and surprisingly, those blitzes I think will be very effective. In people all of a sudden just paying attention. You know, I mean, like you said, most of the guys you pull over out here are almost to their house probably when they're going 60 miles an hour now. So I really appreciate that. I think it's going to be very effective if you can get those planned on a spontaneous, irregular basis. I think that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Can you just go back to the DUIs? How many there were total?
Total, there were 7 DUIs.
7?
Yeah,
so that's a little lower than normal. Yeah. Are we normal, do you know, as a town or population of this size? I hate to ask it that way, sorry. DUIs seem to be, as we discussed, 10 to 12 on a monthly basis.
Yeah, they increase in the summer months.
Yes.
Like just Monday, I arrested someone after a DUI coming from the steakhouse. Two times over the limit. In the summer months, yes, it increases. You know, people are out enjoying and doing things. But during the Memorial Day, I mean, we had what statewide we had over 1,000, what I think almost 1,100 DUI arrests. That was up compared to last year. I think collision wise, we were down a little bit. But for our county, I think we were up a little bit. So
just seems like a large number. Such a small community on a routine basis.
Yeah. And a lot of them too are, I mean, you know, you got people that are coming that aren't residents here that are coming out to enjoy the Delta. So, I mean, you're getting, I would say probably 40% of the people like that are non-residents.
Thanks.
I received a call from Battalion Chief McCumber, who said he was not able to make it. He had a training class at Titanoff. So he did offer staff, he did offer to come in the next meeting, so I'll let you coordinate with him if that's up. Okay. Thank you. Presentations. Jewett Engineering staff.
Facilities that are needed to meet your new permit, common communities that you have, and we're giving you a quick update tonight on that information. Okay, so Sue will turn on the monitor. This is going to be in two parts.
Which one would you like?
Let's do the one on the right first. The manager's man. Yeah, let's do that first. All right, so there's going to be two parts to this. I'm going to talk about your community, the land use in your community, and the number of people in your community, and how that feeds into the master plan. And Steve is going to talk about some recent testing and the results of that testing as sort of a engineering discussion on what our document's going to look like and the values we're going to use in that document. So the most important thing that you got to recognize is the purpose of the master plan is to accommodate your community. It's the plan, what wastewater improvements do we need to meet your permit with the state and accommodate the people that are going to live here. And the basis of this plan is this land use map from the county and homes and projects that have been identified in this land use map. So if you look at the land use map, you see a red boundary. That red boundary is your current service area. And there are everything in your service area we've been told to, let's get that in the master plan and make sure those communities, those things are picked up. So there are some blank lots left in Discovery Bay. There are some undeveloped commercial properties and things like that. It all stems from the land use in here. Now, there are a few projects that are outside the current service area for the community. They're outside the red boundary. If you scroll up just a little bit, you see this area of A2 and A3. A2 right there in the middle, that green area in the middle there, that's Pantages. So they're not in yet, but they have a map. They have an approved map from the county. We don't have an updated zoning map yet, but this is the map that we have, and we know that project's carried forward. So even though they are technically outside your boundary, you haven't formally pulled them in your boundary yet, they're accounted for in the master plan. And if you go down just a little bit farther, you see A3 on the left down there, and that A3 is where Newport Point, the top half of that is Newport Point project. So in general, we follow the plan, but the zoning tells us if there's a blank lot and zoned for a house, we know, okay, you might have a future house there, you know. Or if there's an approved plan, like Pantages and Newport Point, we know how many homes are there. There's also a few areas in the Discovery Bay where they have discussed possible homes, and that's what I'm going to go through now for you. So we start with your land use map, and let's go to the table. All right, and then let's scroll down on the table. So on table A3, which is the second page that we gave you, the table A3-1, we are looking at your existing community and what do you have left built, what do you have left to build that's inside your community, you know? And this is what we want to capture in the master plan. So we sat down with the district, we went through all your zoning information, all of your connections, you know, connections that are to a bare lot, you haven't built a house on, that kind of stuff. Looked at the tax roll, the property information, and we looked at what we have left to build. So there's 67 homes that Kuiper Homes Hoffman had started and they're finishing. That was the original 2,000 that we started with way back in 1990 when we first started the district. There's going to be 2,000 more homes. We're down to 67 now. Undeveloped lots in Discovery Bay, there's 44 still blank lots in Discovery Bay. They was looking for property. You see the Pantages, they're outside your service area, they're included. Newport Point has 70 units, they're included. Hoffman and Villages has 76 units. There's 13 blank lots in the golf course still. There's some 5-acre lots that you can put a house on. The Evans property is zoned agricultural, but is surrounded on three sides by development, high-density development, so we're assuming 19 for that. And then there's been some discussion about the condos going in on this little commercial piece over here for 80 condos going in there. So we're picking up 674 new units on essentially blank land. There's a little adjustment of 38 homes based on dates from when stuff got built. And then the other thing that's been kind of unique is we originally were carrying vacation homes in Discovery Bay where we didn't count them as full-time occupied homes. We counted them as 0.25 occupied homes. So basically, we know they're empty a lot, but we know people come there sometimes. Well, how much wastewater load you have is dependent on how many people you have. And we think the prudent thing at this point in time is to assume that at some point in the future, those homes become real homes and they're fully occupied. So there's six, for whatever reason, we had 661 vacation homes last time, and we carried a 0.25 factor for those. So we're just gonna pick up the other 3/4, which is 496. We're just gonna pick up the other 3/4 of those houses and make them all full-time residences eventually in Discovery. Not at the moment, but eventually. So that gives you about 1,200 homes or equivalent homes because you got a big conversion factor. The 496 is a big conversion factor. 674 new homes and a conversion of 496 homes, if you would, vacation homes. So you go back to the top. So what does that mean for us? Based on your census data, shrink it just a little bit. Scroll right a little bit.
Yeah.
There we go. All right, one more.
I can shrink down one.
There you go.
Just, right. It's too much. Sorry.
All right, go a little bit to the right. Okay, so when we went back to your census in 2010, you had 13,352 residents, so based on the 2010 census. When we did, since then, based on the number of homes you built, you've added another 1,661 residents. And then build out then, and that takes you to 15,000 people, the top line there, 15,000 people. And then build out brings us to another 3,866 homes, or a total for build out of 18,879 population. So what's important about this is the population that makes the load to the treatment plant. There's been a lot of discussion when the droughts came in, our water, wastewater flows went down, our flows went down a lot when the drought came in. That was water conservation, but people were still here. In fact, you were adding people, 1,661 people got added. So we felt it's more important than to talk about people than with the exact wastewater flow to the treatment plant, because what's clear now in changing droughts and changing regulations, wastewater flows are changing. But that isn't really the answer you want. You really want to know, can I build my 661 lots? Can I accommodate 3,800 people? That's what you want to know in a community. And so at the moment, these are the numbers that we're proceeding for in the master plan in terms of your population, your service boundaries, and the planned communities that we have left, which are on these two tables, table 3-1, and the population here in the land use map there. So that's the first part about our, is the plan going to meet your needs? And then Steve's going to talk about some special testing we did, and then essentially the long and short of it in terms of the engineering and what we're going to start with as the basis of what we're going to do.
Well, thank you, Greg. I'll try to keep this short and not too technical, but
so there's a summary, the two-page summary I handed you. I handed you a thick document in this two-page summary. Yeah.
So what we just recently completed is the closing loads from the master plan is pretty critical, and we bring this front and center to discuss the results of this, because this is very important as we move forward with completing the master plan. We want to make sure that we have agreement on what the design flows and loads we're going to use for this master plan projected forward. And the reason that this is important, just a little history, I was involved with the last master plan effort was done in 2010. And at that time when we presented to the board, there was a lot of discussion, maybe controversy about what numbers were being used. And we learned our lesson that time is not to get too far ahead of you on this, because if you change your numbers after you complete the master plan, you're doing the master plan all over again. So we wanted to avoid that. So in 2018, the average flows at the wastewater treatment plant were 1.8 million gallons a day. Now we are in 2019, and our wastewater flows have dropped down to 1.32 million gallons a day on an average basis. So there was been a lot of discussions initially. Well, okay, maybe even though we've got the population growth, something magical has happened here, and maybe we got more capacity or treatment plant because our flows are going down. I think Mr. Davis made a good analogy at our wastewater committee meeting, said that with the drought and everything going on, we've got the folks in this state have practiced water conservation. So we've got a lot of communities in the valley where we've seen the wastewater flows go down. But think of it this way. When you use your toilet, right, and you're doing water conservation, you're putting a brick in the tank or whatever, you're using less water. But what you deposit in that toilet, that still has to be treated at the wastewater treatment plant. So that's we call that the organic loading. So we still have to treat that. That typically does not go down. And so what you see is when you have wastewater where the flows are going down, typically what you see is the organic concentration going up. We call that BOD, but we see those, the concentration numbers going up, and the total loading staying about the same for all things being equal. And that's very typical for a lot of the communities in the valley, where we see that the flows have gone down, but the actual organic loading treatment plant has not gone down, it's gone up, resulting in a higher concentration of wastewater. So when we did the master plan in 2010, at that time, there was some very suspect data about the sampling stuff, because we were seeing flows and we're seeing very low BOD concentrations on that. And so when we did that analysis, we had to do some comparisons to the population, look at this.
and made some assumptions. Now, come full circle, looking at the data that we've collected over the last 8 years on this thing, we were seeing something that was seemed like an anomaly here, where we're seeing, okay, we can understand why the flows are going down, but why are the concentrations so low? So we've done some special influent monitoring. I won't get into the weeds on this, but in essence, what we discovered is that there were some problems with the sampling that was going on. We were having an effect where the sampler was getting ragged up and it was essentially filtering out some of the wastewater. So we were getting non-representative samples on this. By doing this kind of special influent monitoring, we've been able to kind of vet this and determine, and with a certain amount of confidence, put together some numbers to move forward on this master plan that makes sense to us. And really what we'd like to do is to make sure that that you as a board are comfortable with this. We're not asking you to make a decision, but we certainly want to know that if there's any objections to this, we want to hear about it. So bottom line on this thing right now is that for the purposes of this master plan, we're designing for a BLD concentration of 275 milligrams per liter. That's very much in line with other communities that have practiced water conservation. And we recognize that moving forward that we probably won't see the wastewater flows back up to the high per capita numbers that we saw before the drought that we had. Everybody's practicing conservation that's here. That's probably something that's going to be somewhat permanent. There's going to be more pressure from the state to actually do more water conservation. But in the end, we still have to treat the pounds of organic loading that goes to the plant. So even though flows go down, the total loading of the plant doesn't necessarily go down proportional with the flows. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So with that, we're here to just, we've given you a chapter of the master plan to read over, provided a summary of key findings in it. And after you've looked at this and read through this, you have any questions for Greg or myself, we'd certainly be happy to address those. But we're ready to move forward with completing the master plan based on the design criteria that's in the last page of the chapter here. And again, we're talking about when we compare the total organic load in the plant, we're not seeing a big difference from what we saw when we used the projections in 2010 on 12 pounds. But we're seeing higher concentrations, lower flows, higher concentrations, total pounds of BOD, organic load in the plant, about the same. Are there any questions?
So in summary, regardless of how much water goes to the plant, the pollutants are the same.
Yes, yes. So that, I should have said it that way.
No,
it's
okay. Long-winded.
And on that basis, we're proceeding forward with working on the rest of the master plan. Right. One thing that was important is we took a lot of time to reestablish this. So we started in November. We did special testing in January. We did it again in March. In April, because we weren't happy with the results from January. We used three different labs, really did it right, and so we could be really conclusive about this organics loading issue. And it's backed up, and then we checked it against how many people in the community, how much people normally make, and we checked it against what the normal flow of the community is and stuff. So on that basis, we're feeling pretty comfortable that this will be the basis as we go forth on the rest of the planning document.
Would there be any variance because of time of year? I mean, you did it in the winter, you've got it sort of in the spring. Is summer or fall any different?
Yeah. Now, some communities can see a lot of variance, a seasonal variance on when you compare the average annual flow to the average day maximum flow, the month with the higher flows and stuff like that. We don't see as much variance in this community. And we see some consistency, so we're not too overly concerned about it. We do have our peaking factors. We recognize that certain months have higher flows than other months, but it's not as dramatic as some other communities.
And given this is a predominantly a residential community,
right.
I wouldn't expect it to be, but I didn't know if there was something.
Right,
some
and that is a significant factor when you're dealing with mostly a residential community.
So, thank you.
Okay, so in summary, we made good progress. We took some time on the master plan to really do some more testing to back up, and everything's kind of gelled together, and we're proceeding on to that with this information. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I ask one quick question? If I heard you correct in the committee meeting that we went to also, you're actually more confident with the numbers you're seeing today because of the additional testing and things you did than what we did when we did the 2010 numbers.
Yeah, the sending to the three labs really helped out. There was a cost to that, but it really brought the issue clear to us. Once we sent it out to three labs, we had three people looking at it, and we could see what happened when we didn't keep the sample quite right. We could see a different result. So we're definitely more confident in the numbers. And then the numbers check, we've done check them three different ways, just based on population, based on some other, what's the communities around us doing, and they all came in, but they started with the lab results and the additional testing, and so that made us feel pretty good.
Thank you.
And being on the committee, I watched the transition. I know that you knew the numbers were good, but you couldn't, by data, convince yourself that
right.
They were absolutely good.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you did find that solution and brought it to resolution. Good job.
All right.
Okay, Blue North and Scout Meeting Quarter up here.
Is just an overview of the water system. There's some photos and descriptions there that maybe are information that's just information you've probably seen before. And then the four projects that I'm going to go over are the items 2 through 5. So the water system. So here's a map of Discovery Bay. What we have on the map are 6 of the wells that the district uses to obtain its water supply, shown as the W circles. I just got some photos here. So the town gets its water from water supply wells. There's 6 of them throughout town. And this is a picture of one of them that's at Willow Lake Water Treatment Plant. The water as it combines is treated in filters at 2 different treatment plants, the Willow Lake and Newport, for removal of iron manganese that's in the groundwater supply. Then there's the storage component. Each plant has a storage, which is what the town has for its fire safety and to meet its peaking needs so that the wells don't have to be sized for the instantaneous peak. From there, there's booster pumps that take the water from the tanks and put it into the drinking water system where there's 50 miles of pipeline that distributes, so it's the distribution system, to all the services. And this is a simplification of everything, but just to give everybody context, because I'll be touching on kind of all of these elements tonight. So my firm, Lorfin Scalmanini, has been working in this East Contra Costa area for over 30 years, and we've developed a lot of information over that time. This is a cross-section of the groundwater formations below us that we're using for water supply. I'm not the person who has put this together, I'm not the contributor of it, and I'm an engineer, but there's a lot of hydrogeologists and geologists that can speak to this. The significant factors of this aquifer formation are the shallow units. The aquifer B, which is the one up on top, are the ones that we want to avoid. They have a lot of salt, it's saline, it's brine. The water that we're using for supply is aquifer A, and that plays into how we design the wells for Discovery Bay. And aquifer A is really the subject of things such as Sigma and the groundwater management. This is aquifer A, is the one that we're talking about in terms of managing properly. So well design criteria, here's a schematic of one of the wells in Discovery Bay. This is well number 6, the same photo before, but they're all pretty similar in nature. There's the salmon or pink zone up on top is where you would see the brine occurring, and we put in deep seals in the wells. We make sure we're completing that in a clay layer to prevent any sort of seepage. So the whole construction of the well is really to prevent migration of that shallow aquifer into the deeper aquifers. And then we want to get as much capacity as efficiently as possible in the screen section and that yellow section down below. So when we equip it, we put a pump inside the well, and we're essentially drawing water from the aquifer, and it's filling in this can. And it essentially is filtering. So these wells have a lot of maintenance associated with it that we're getting that I'm going to be getting into. There's six wells in the system. Here's a table that covers it, and there's a range of ages. We've got the newest one that was 5 years ago, and then the oldest well, two, that's 48 years. And typically we would think of a well like a typical service life might be 30 to 50 years. Some go sooner, perhaps, if there's environmental issues that cause that. But some go longer. There's wells in operation today, they're 60 plus years. So there's not really a rule of thumb, but we do start to pay a lot of more attention as the decades start to add on with the wells. Factors such as how it was designed could affect it, the thickness of the material, water quality, clogging of the screens, or structural collapse. The wells have a lot of burden, a lot of earth pressure that's pushing in on the casing itself. So those, if they're shifting or anything like that, that's not good. And biofouling is another element. And we haven't seen any of those except for some isolated water quality issues, such as in 5A. Other than that, there really hasn't been any major issues with the wells in Discovery Bay. Well 1B had a rehab in 2011. That or 2012 is when the pump was put in, and before that, I think the pump was maybe 15 years old, and that's pretty normal to start seeing pumps having to get replaced after 10 to 15 years. And what we just did was a rehab on well 2, which had a pump that was installed in 2003, and a rehab on well 4, which had a pump that was installed in 2001. So we got pretty good service life out of those particular wells. So about the rehabs now, we track on a biannual basis. We come and we test the wells. We monitor the same parameters in the same ways that we track trends, basically. And the graph in the top left is the specific capacity, which is measuring the production from the well per foot of drawdown in the well. And it's a measure of how clogged the well might be. There's an installed original specific capacity, and we track that over time. We start to see declines, that means there's some clogging occurring, and we need to get in there and get to it before, because it's never fully reversible. Once it starts to clog, you'll get some capacity back, but it won't ever be restored to original. And then down on the graph on the bottom right is when we're looking at efficiency, and that's to tell us a lot of things about the pump. Efficiency is one measure, and we're also looking at the hydraulics on the pump curve itself, which I don't have a graph for that, but that'll tell us if we are dropping efficiency, is it a pump issue, is it a motor issue, and we have to ask, there's a lot of other questions that come into it, if it's a submersible, meaning the motor is submerged underwater, or if it's a vertical turbine, meaning the motor's up on top and there's a line shaft going hundreds of feet down to spin the pump. So what we have here are two data points from the post-rehab and 4A. The concern that we had on 4A is the red trend you see declining, and that was the only one that really is showing that trend. So we said we need to do a rehab on that. And in the 2017, it dropped pretty dramatically compared to the drops that we were seeing before. And the rehab was restored it, brought it back up, and we're just going to continue to monitor it. And then on the efficiency, both of them dropped dramatically, meaning both 4A and 2. And I didn't put the other efficiencies on here because it would just be too busy. But 4A and 2 were the ones that had issues that we could tell. And they were both pumps were off the curve and the efficiencies dropped. So that told us it's probably not a motor issue. It's probably more of a pump wearing out. And they're 16-year-old pumps, so we weren't really surprised by that either. And really, it was just get it out and do it in the winter before the high demand, because with six wells, taking two off in the summer months would really tax Veolia, it's more complicated to do in the summer when the demands are higher. So the restored efficiencies after you put the new pumps on are back to where you think of as a new pump condition for efficiencies. So just some photos, documentation, just so you can see what we did. This is a as-built that we developed for well 2. Now well 2 is the older well, 48 years. We weren't here when it was drilled, but we do have some records on it. We've done video surveys. We've collected information on it. So this is a as-built that we prepared based on the information we've gotten. Here's a photo of the construction crew putting in the new pump, and that's the part that's at the bottom bottom of the well there. And then the picture in the distance is them hanging a stick of column pipe that they lower it down. And I think this pump is set 220 feet inside that well casing. You can see the well goes down 350, but the pump is somewhere around 220. We lowered it a little bit this time in case it does start to clog to keep a good buffer between the water and the pump. Then here's a picture of 4A. Now 4A, we were getting at two things. We knew there was a pump issue, so we knew we had to pull the pump, and then we also saw a specific capacity was climbing. So we did a very vigorous rehab on 4A, which involved chemicals and some brushing, surging chemicals into the screens in the gravel pack, brushing some more, essentially trying to break up the solids and then airlift it and pump it out. And we did some amount of that type of thing on well two, but given the age of well two and that it wasn't really showing those declines, we didn't want to push it, right? So we weren't going to get much out of it, basically. So here's a picture of the new column pipe I didn't put a picture of the old column pipe. That might have been even more telling, but to see the tubercles and the corrosion and everything on that, the pipe was just not ready, couldn't be reused. Now we did reuse the motor, and that's significant here because the motor that you see there is this the rusty can that's below the pump is actually the best motor that's ever, submersible motors ever made. And it is 18 years, does have age, but we've seen them run longer. And like we said, it didn't look like it was a motor issue. The motor megged out, checked fine when we were pulling it out, so we put it back in. But there is some concerns about how much life that motor is going to have left, so we have some money in the budget to do a motor replacement on this one. Now, this particular brand's high cost and high lead times, so it's something we'd want to plan for and not have it just fail on us. So I'm going to talk a little bit. Yeah.
Real briefly, if I read that one of the previous slides, Greg. So on well four, which is not the oldest, but that's over Newport, right?
Yeah.
So we lost 40% efficiency and only gained 10% back?
So it dropped 25% in the last 2 years, and we recovered maybe half of what we saw it drop in the last 2 years. But when I say 40%, that's from the installed capacity. And the installed capacity was from a number in 2001. And a lot of these specific capacity numbers are very subject to how accurate the flow reading is, which is sometimes the hardest one to really
dial in. So it's better than it sounds.
So there's usually kind of a margin. If we see it drop a couple points, we won't say, oh, time to do a rehab. We want to see a trend is really what we're looking for.
All right.
Because that tells us that there's really something going on that's worth putting in money.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. So well eight alternative. This is another project that we've been working on with the town and the staff and looking at. We presented this, and this is all just kind of recap here, so we don't have to get into too much detail. But I don't have too much new information to share other than we're looking at these three CIP projects, which had a total budget of $3.9 million. That was originally from the 2010 Water Master Plan. And we're now looking at alternatives for well eight, which is to replace 5A. I mentioned that's the one that has a water quality issue. And there's some concepts that can save money on the CMP and still achieve the same objectives that those other projects are doing. So here's a figure of the CIP at Newport would be a tank at Newport to increase the peak flow and fire flow capacity of the system. This was the basis of it was that. And it would just be a site expansion off of the site. I think the property is owned. I think the district owns that property. It would be the cost to develop and add this tank. And then at Willow, there was a CIP that was to add a filter, and adding a filter would increase the total treatment capacity that can go into the system to meet these projected maximum data demands. So Newport was about peak and fire flow and making sure there's enough in storage to meet, have a reserve, because it looked like the peak where it's gonna eat into that fire reserve. Whereas the filter at Willow was about being able to have the capacity to treat in a maximum day demand, put that much volume of water, and the tanks are there for peak. So, but there's some logistics, obviously, with this one. It's right off the map, but the district offices are right there. So we think we can make it work. We've got two scenarios where we could put the other filter in the backwash tank needed, but obviously it will make a tight situation even tighter. So the alternatives that we're looking at for well 8 is a standalone concept. And this map shows four different options that we're exploring right now. It would treat the water on site with a filter. So that would, right off the bat, eliminate the need for the filter at Willow. That project just goes away. It would deliver straight into the distribution system which, depending on where it's located and how the hydraulics work, could eliminate the need for the Newport tank. And that's what we're exploring right now with the modeling. And it looks like the two options up on the north are going to have the best benefit. Now, option four, we just threw in there, which is a Pantages option. Probably has some other logistics to really think about if that's one that we want to pursue, but we thought, what the heck, we're doing the modeling. Let's see if this has a much higher favorable result, you know, just for, you know, so we have all options on the table. But essentially, those ones are working best because that's where there's bigger pipes feeding the villages. So those are 16-inch pipes, which my staff engineer, Felicia, she's doing the modeling. She said it's basically like the freeway. So it can handle a lot of capacity, and Newport is right there. And it just, you know, all the water kind of goes there, right? So that's where a lot of the loads are going. And Bernie's shaking his head yes. I think he kind of agrees that's what's happening. And so if we put a well aid up there, that would be the best way to offset that. Now, the other two options have some merits too, because I think there's land that we can put it on, specifically option two in Centex. So we're trying to see is, can we show on a modeling basis that this can offset sufficiently on the peak flow? And what we're doing is kind of revisiting, well, what's the basis for that fire reserve? All comes down to hydraulics. So we're working on a draft right now, and we're going to talk to the staff about it in a week or two, and then hopefully we'll get kind of a more detailed update on where we're at on that. Okay, Laguna Court underwater crossing break. So this occurred on February 20th, an underwater crossing in the town. There's 11 of these that are potable water mains that go underneath the bays, and they connect one dead end to another so that you don't have a dead end. Dead ends in the system aren't great. They're high maintenance. It's where water quality complaints usually derive. And having the crossing provides hydraulic efficiency and improves fire flows. So the first thing was, is it what condition is it in right now? And they were able to, at that, you know, on the spot, isolate the valves on both sides. Didn't impact services. There wasn't a drop in pressure, so there wasn't a concern of any kind of contamination that happened. And it's currently isolated with those valves. So now the next question is, do we need to replace it? So we did some modeling to look into whether, you know, should be, you know, if we absolutely need it. And then we're also exploring what the cause might be and some logistics for repair or replacement if that's the route we go. So on the modeling, we've already completed that. We issued a brief memo to the staff on that. And essentially, this is just a figure off to the side that just kind of shows one of many figures that was in the model. But this shows that the pressures are lowest in that area. So in the peak hour demand, the pressures can get down to just around 40, and maybe 39 is what our model shows. The model might be slightly more conservative. It depends on how accurate really that whole thing is. There's a lot that goes into that. And 40 is substandard. You know, we need it to be above 40 at all times. So by closing the crossing, it exacerbates that slightly. It goes from 39 to 36 PSI, according to the model. And it also reduces the fire flow capacities because the freeway in Willow is essentially the 12-inch that comes off of Willow and goes up Discovery Bay Boulevard, and then it goes down to an 8, and then we've got some 6 inches, and you've got an 8 that crosses at Laguna. So that provides a lot of that provides the main source really for firefighting purposes is going under Laguna. But there's still a flow. So I'm saying there's still 1,000 gallons per minute. But there's, on average, we kind of bracketed it, and we said on average it's like a 10% reduction, but in some cases it's higher, some cases it's lower, but there's clearly so if there was any crossing that we want to keep, it'd probably be that one. And then we're also looking into other options of possibly upsizing of the boat pipelines. So now at this point we're examining, where do we go from here, knowing that we want to keep it. We're talking about diver inspections. The pipe is buried, that has challenges and costs. We're circling around costs, talking about getting a corrosion expert to do a pothole, which would be a much lower cost endeavor, to just see, well, what condition is the pipe in. So we don't want to go in and do a repair and spend a lot of money to even investigate it to do a repair if we're just going to go with a replacement, but it would save a lot of money if a repair is feasible. So we're talking about methodologies for that and different methods for replacement. And we're currently researching. So that's it for the Laguna crossing. Last is PLC and SCADA upgrades. We just completed the SCADA and PLC upgrades with Veolia, and we had a contractor that worked out very well on that project. And the only slide I had for that was it was on budget, it was on schedule, and we're going to
Excellent, all right.
Any questions? When there's no questions, then it means you've covered all the details. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, on to business and actions. G1, discussion of possible action to approve official election ballot for the 2019 Board of Directors for the special district.
Yes, our special district risk management authority is run by a board of directors, much like the board here. They come up for election, and the member agencies of that authority vote for members, and they ask that we do a vote, which is conducted by each independent district board that's a member. In this particular case, they had five candidates running for three seats. Staff has no personal knowledge of these candidates, but we did, we looked at the incumbents, and then we looked at the remaining three at their qualifications, and staff's opinion was that Patrick O'Rourke actually had, we felt, a more in-depth resume, and he also sent things out saying he'd volunteer to come to a meeting and speak, etc. So nothing other than what I just told you is staff made this recommendation. So we're looking for a vote, if the board so chooses, to put these people on the SDRMA ballot.
We've been members of SDRMA for quite a number of years, right?
Yes.
I think the organization is running well. They've returned some money to us. They provide a lot of services. So I'm kind of inclined. The incumbents seem to be doing a heck of a job, and the district seems to be benefiting from the work of that board, and that would kind of lean to the incumbents.
I did take a look at the resumes, I would say, the write-ups from each. And I saw the two that we had not selected that were non-incumbents were very weak in their presentation to, it was more of I want to be instead of why I should be. So I agree with the number of names.
Okay,
I have a motion. Oh, I'm sorry, thank you. Public comment. See no public comment, bring it back to the board.
I would move that the board support the re-election of Bob Swan and Sandy Seifert Rappings to the SDRMA Board of Directors.
Second.
Okay. I have a first and a second. Did you say O'Rourke?
No, I said
there's three,
Bob
correct.
Swan. Three seats, I'm sorry.
Yes, so I want to make sure the motion
yes,
is
right. And O'Rourke.
And O'Rourke.
And O'Rourke.
As the additional. Clear? Okay. I have a first and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item G2, discussion of possible action for the preliminary draft.
Turn this over to our finance manager, Dina.
Hello.
Okay, good evening. Before you is the fiscal year 2019-20 proposed budget. There have been changes since I presented it at the preliminary budget workshop on May 22nd, and I will walk you through those changes tonight. All of the budgets, at the budget meeting, there were some suggestions, and I have incorporated those into the document. I have updated all the actuals through April 2019, as well as the addition of table headers. So I've added all the table headers that we discussed. Okay. So if we can go to page 14, I'd like to start there. This is the budget message. So I wrote this and now I've incorporated it in the document. Okay. Page 27. You could look at account number 20417451. This is the insurances. We discussed this also at the budget workshop. I've increased the budget $9,000 to reflect the rate increase. page 28, I revised the entire capital table. I placed the budget dollars in the correct or in their perspective categories. So on our budget document, there are these headers, and I totaled up the dollar amounts and I put them in the correct headers, okay, to make it simpler and easier for you to read. Page 29. I removed a graph and a reserve balances table, and I replaced it with a budget fund balance summary table so that you can, for better fund clarity. So you can take a look at that. We can move to page 33. And this is in the Water Services Department. If you could look at account code number 2141-7451. Again, that's the insurance. And I increased that budget $9,000 to reflect the rate increase. Page 34. I again revised the wastewater capital improvement table, and I put all of the dollar amounts under the correct headers. Okay, page 35. I removed the graph and the reserve balance table that were originally in the document and replaced it with the budgeted fund balance summary table for, again, better fund clarity of the wastewater department. Page 37. You can look at account code number 4031-5226 under revenue. I increased the budget from $14,000 to $55,000 in revenue to better reflect the past revenue history of the vehicle related reimbursable. If you look at page 40, please. Like the water and wastewater department, I revised the capital improvement table, and I added the landscaping, streets, parks, building, and equipment categories and put the funds in the proper categories. Page 41. Again, like water and wastewater, to keep everything consistent, I removed the graph and the reserve balance table and replaced it with the fund balance summary for Zone 8. Page 43. This is lighting and landscaping zone 9. The revenue table, please, and the account code number 4131-5226. And I increased the vehicle revenue from $4,000 to $13,000 to reflect past revenue history. Page 44, I again, like all the other departments, updated the CIP capital improvement table. Page 45, I removed the graph and reserve balance table and replaced it with the budget fund balance summary table. We can move to page 54. I added next year debt service payments to the bottom of, you can see the new table there. Are there any questions at this time? That concludes the budget presentation, the proposed budget. You will have 2 weeks to review it And on June 19th will be the public hearing and the final adoption. Thank you.
Thank you, Dana. And I'm going, at this time, I'll open up for public comments. I have the first card from Bill Helfer.
I'm Bill Helfer at 661 Beaver Court. The presentation of the Zone 8 budget at tonight's meeting continues to hide the best kept secret of the town of Discovery Bay Community Service District. The secret is that the community center's budgeted subsidy is $365,600 paid from the Zone 8 tax revenue. The budget as presented shows that the lighting and landscape 8 will have revenue in excess of expenses of $164,000. When the Hoffman money of $132,000 is excluded, the budget surplus is $33,365. What is hidden in the budget is the fact that the budget for lighting and landscape projects that the revenue will exceed expenses by $398,965. However, the budget for the Recreation or Community Center projects that the expenses will exceed revenue by $365,600. I challenge you to look at the Zone 8 budget that was just presented and easily pull out the numbers for the lighting and landscape separately from the recreation budget. There's a sticker on your door touting that the CSD is outstanding for its transparency. Transparency would allow any reader of the budget that was just presented or the audited financial statements that were approved for the year ended June 30th, 2018 to know and understand how much the community center consumes of the Zone 8 property tax revenues received. The real issue isn't the fact that the community center consumes 54.4% of the Zone 8 property tax revenue. That revenue is projected to be $672,615 for the budget. It is the fact that the board, through the financial reporting and budgeting process, makes it extremely hard, if not impossible, for the average reader or any reader to see how the money is spent. Based on the budget report being shared tonight and the audited financial statements for the year ended June 30th, 2018, how can you as a board make financial decisions regarding the operation of the community center when you must not know what the revenue and costs are? Or are you receiving breakout information that you're not sharing with us? Since you have only the Zone 8 tax money available to subsidize the community center, the property owners in Zone 8 have the right to know how much the community center operation is costing them. Thank you.
Thank you. Next card is Frank Vizinti.
Frank Vizinti, 940 Discovery Boulevard. I'm going to read my thing, get through it. Whereas on June 30th, 2010, the town of Discovery Bay's liabilities were $563,000. And whereas on June 30th, 2018, the town of Discovery Bay's liabilities were $22.6 million due to the prior and current board member approval of revenue bonds issued under the Discovery Bay Public Financing Authority. And whereas homeowners cannot vote on revenue bonds issued by the board under the Discovery Bay Public Financing Authority. And whereas homeowners must pay $23 million for bonds plus interest until 2047. And whereas on June 30th, 2010, the town of Discovery Bay's total unrestricted assets were $8.4 million. And whereas on June 30th, 2018, the town of Discovery Bay's unrestricted assets were $17 million due to prior and current board approval of revenue bonds issued under the Discovery Bay Public Financing Authority. And whereas prior and current board members used revenue bonds for water, wastewater, and water meters instead of using unrestricted assets. Now, therefore, the Board of Directors of the Town of Discovery Bay Community Services District should resolve as follows. Dissolve the Discovery Bay Public Financing Authority established in 2012 by the board to issue revenue bonds and circumvent a homeowner vote, use unrestricted assets instead of bonds as a checks and balance on spending, and start with the pool, allow homeowners to vote on any and all assets, charges, and fees. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Any other public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Manager's report.
Excuse me, Jared, is there going to be a vote on the preliminary budget?
I went and did it again, I'm sorry. I went right by it.
There's no motion either.
Yeah, I got it.
Is there a need for a motion since the final's going to come back in 2 weeks?
Typically what happens in the budget procedure is that a preliminary budget is adopted, then there's a notice that is published for the public to come back, then the board considers the final budget after the publication of the notice that the board will be adopting the final budget.
Move approval of preliminary budget.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, legal. Manager's report.
No manager.
No managers. Director's report. We have a finance committee meeting. Director Lee.
Yes, we have a finance committee meeting today, and we discussed financing for solar at the wastewater treatment plant. And more information to come back.
Thank you. Internal operations committee.
Again, quick report. We discussed our internal operations bylaws, and those will be coming to the board. And we also discussed a public works contract policy, which will also be coming to the board.
Thank you. And water and wastewater committee.
We had a complete summary of the water wastewater committee just at our last meeting.
This was the short version. Thank you. Any other reportable items?
How about, let me say something about the summer camp, Brian?
It was amazing. Turnout is, again, it was the Saturday night, so it's going to be a pretty Saturday night. I think it's the largest turnout that I've seen since we've started these concert series. preliminary numbers are, survey has not disappointed and raised about 12,500 alcohol sales in a 4-hour period. Besides that, this is an amazing night. There was no incidences. Our general manager was assisting at the gates and making sure that no one was bringing anything that wasn't supposed to be brought in. And people were dancing to the wee hours of the night.
Good job.
Yeah, I heard all the things about it, Brian. I wish I could have been there.
And you probably would have had more people, but there was a concert going on at the yacht club as well at the same time. Unfortunate, but it sounds like you did okay without
them. I think we're maxed out. More were necessary.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Director Gray, for highlighting that. General Manager's report.
Two things. One, I wanted to let you know that Matt Beavers, our water technician, was May 22nd, was headed home from work, spotted a fire at a residence, and played superhero, jumped out, and with the assistance of another Good Samaritan, put the fire out and actually prevented quite a bit further damage, and so we're kind of proud of him, and he got an attaboy in his file, so just thought I'd let you know we're out there with our capes on. And
and that's what the garden hose?
Yeah, absolutely, the garden hose, yeah. He beat fire by about 15 minutes, so I hear he's applying, but we'll talk to him later about that. The other issue is, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but I do believe there will be some activity starting tomorrow to put the electronic signboard in. There'll be some trenching, and then I think the next day we're looking at trying to get the cement foundation in and giving it the weekend to cure. We need to find a way with Bernie's help to get the actual sign to the location, I guess, on Monday, and then hopefully it'll get installed.
Well, didn't know Bernie was that strong. Good news, thank you. Anything else?
That concludes the general manager's report.
Correspondence received, you can see from the fire and the municipal advisory council for reference. Future agenda items. Seeing none, I'll turn it over to legal.
Town Discovery Bay will adjourn to closed session to consider the item identified on the agenda as N1.